Well, what an incredible privilege to get to be with you this morning. Let's take our Bibles, please, to Mark chapter 2. Let's open our Bibles up to Mark chapter 2, and we'll get started there in just one moment. I think we would all agree that it feels pretty amazing when someone goes above and beyond to help us out in some way. It could be a doctor that calls and checks in on you just to make sure that your recovery is going well. It could be a teacher that spends a little bit of extra time with you to make sure that you master a particular subject. But whenever someone has exceeded our expectations and they have clearly gone the second mile to help us, we stop and we're just full of gratitude. And that is certainly the way that my family and I feel to get to be with you this morning. In so many ways, this church has gone above and beyond for us, and has been a blessing. I told Ken the other day on the phone, literally a life-changing blessing for me and my family. And for those of you that I don't know yet, I look forward to getting to greet you as the day continues. But even though we can all think about people that have gone above and beyond for us, what I want us to see in Mark chapter 2 this morning is that you have four specific friends that have gone above and beyond in bringing their paralyzed friend to Jesus. And it might even be easy when we look at this particular text to just focus on what these men are doing and the great faith that they are showing. But please get this. In Mark chapter 2, it's Jesus that is going above and beyond. They have come there with the hope of this physical illness being taken away, with the man's legs being restored. But ultimately, Jesus is taking this man's sins away. And he's doing it with a grace and an authority that stuns the immediate crowd and that can continue to draw us closer to him. So we have kind of three things that I'd like us to cover in the lesson this morning. First, I want to look at the crowd that is there in the city of Capernaum. I'll put some pictures, like satellite image and pictures from Capernaum up in just a second. But there's a really big crowd here, and that is significant because all through the book of Mark, we see the crowds around Jesus, sometimes going up, sometimes going down in number. But the crowds are something that have to be not dismissed, just navigated. And there's some great lessons here. The second thing we'll look at is the faith of these four friends. Because anybody that impresses Jesus is somebody that I want to learn from. And Jesus seems to be impressed with their faith. And the third thing we'll try to do in the lesson is look at where Jesus ultimately goes above and beyond and gives forgiveness to this man and ultimately to us. So let's start reading here in Mark chapter 2, beginning in verse 1. When he'd come back to Capernaum several days afterward, it was heard that he was at home, and many were gathered together so that there was no longer room, not even near the door, and he was speaking the word to them. And they came, bringing to him a paralytic, carried by four men. Being unable to get to him because of the crowd, they removed the roof above him, and when they dug an opening, they let down the pallet on which the paralytic was lying. And Jesus, seeing their faith, said to the paralytic, "Son, your sins are forgiven." But some of the scribes were sitting there, reasoning in their hearts, "Why does this man speak this way? He's blaspheming. Who can forgive sins but God alone?" And immediately Jesus, aware in his spirit that they were reasoning that way within themselves, said to them, "Why are you reasoning about these things in your hearts? Which is easier to say to the paralytic, 'Your sins are forgiven,' or to say, 'Get up and pick up your pallet and walk'? But so that you may know the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins," he said to the paralytic, "I say to you, get up, pick up your pallet, and go home." And so he got up and immediately picked up the pallet and went out in the sight of everyone, that they were all amazed and were glorifying God, saying, "We have never seen anything like this." And he went out again by the seashore, and all the people were coming to him, and he was teaching them. Notice in verse 2, he is speaking the word, and in verse 13, he's teaching them. Jesus has an important message for these people. I think there's an important message in this chapter for us today. When we think about the crowd that was there at Capernaum, please appreciate that this following for Jesus had been growing. They didn't know a lot, but they knew enough. In verse 1 and verse 2 here, we see that he's in Capernaum, and it was heard. This is a small town, and it would be easy for information to kind of travel through that area. It was heard that he was back in the city, and many were gathered there, so much so that there's no longer room to be around Jesus. We can think about where this took place. If you're not familiar, Capernaum is on the north end of the Sea of Galilee, right where that giant arrow is pointing. And if we, of course, zoom in a little bit more, here's an aerial shot. I think you can see the big black octagon in the middle. That's like a church building that's been built over the traditional location of Peter's home there in the city of Capernaum. Just below that on the picture, you'll see the kind of large white area. That is a synagogue. And you can see that this was not a giant place. The reason for the picture is just to say, like, hey, this is a fishing village. And it wouldn't take long to run through that small area and to say, he's here, he's here, he's here. Jesus is back. And for people to begin to gather around the home where Peter and his wife, and we get, I guess, his mother-in-law and Andrew are all staying there in Capernaum. If we go a little bit closer, this is looking underneath that large church building. This is, I think, the 4th century. Jeff can probably fix me on that. But I think this was 4th century house that you can see from kind of the ground level. And the problem with just looking at these ruins there at the ground level is that although they're nice and they're well-preserved and well-excavated, you can't look inside. So when you go upstairs into the church building there, you can actually look down and see the remains of the 1st century house. Okay, lots of pictures to make this point. For the 4 men on the roof looking down, that's their view, right? They're looking down. And can you see that this is not a very big house, right? It would not take long for a crowd to fill that house so much that there was not room at the door. And what I want you to see about this crowd is that it could have been tight quarters. They were not maintaining their 6 feet, right? It could have been tight quarters, but they weren't there for the comfort. They were there for Jesus. And when we think about how we navigate all the crazy logistics this year has brought, and how we navigate the crowd when we don't have blue tape everywhere and you're just fighting to get a parking spot on a Sunday morning, we're there for Jesus. More and more people have been coming to Jesus through the book of Mark. In chapter 1, verse 21 and verse 22, Mark again emphasizes they want to hear what he's teaching. He's teaching with authority, and they are impressed by what he delivers. In chapter 1, verse 27 and down into verse 32, they're impressed by his miracles, and his ministry continues to expand through the end of chapter 1, as is described in verse 38 and in verse 45. What are we supposed to do in that kind of crowd? I don't think anyone was surprised that there was a packed house around Jesus there in Capernaum. And what I would tell you, what we really need to be able to focus on is to know why we've come in the first place. Why are you here this morning? I know you're not here just for me. It's great to see other, I'm assuming, smiling faces, right? But it's great to see friendly faces. But why are we here? We are here to worship our Father. We are here to stir one another up to love and good works. We're here to remember Christ. And I think it's setting this in our mind that helps us navigate the crowd. Because there are times that the crowd feels a little bit more like the DMV. You know, when you go to the DMV and you see it's crowded and you're thinking, ugh, all I want is that sticker for my license plate, or all I want is to just renew my license, and there's a crowd, then everyone in the crowd, let's just admit it, they're in our way. And we really wish that the crowd wasn't there. But when we're in worship, that's not what the crowd is about. It's not people that are in our way. It's like going to a family barbecue, and you're thrilled that everybody is there, and you just throw an extra few hamburgers and hot dogs on the grill because it's family, and you want to bump into each other. When we think about navigating the crowd when we come to worship, don't think of it like the DMV. Remember that every single one of us are here for Jesus. And I think what that means really is if we will look to make room for others, first in our hearts, that the logistics take care of themselves, right? I'm sure that your elders have been very prayerful and have pulled their hair out just like all elders across the world these days. But why are we doing this? Again, because we make room for others first in our heart. I would guess that there are some people here this morning that don't like the crowd very much. Maybe you would describe yourself as an introvert like Tracy would. and just say, you know what? Crowds are not my thing. Crowds are not really where I get my energy. For me, I'm a people person. I get filled up when I'm with lots of people. For Tracy, she's more of a Kindle person, right? She gets filled up to stop and read a book. But think about this. We enjoy the crowd because I look around and go, wait a minute, but that person is growing. And that person is growing. And there's a family that's drawing closer to God. And there's a person that's being honest about their struggles. When we look at who is here with us, there is not like this distance or pushback. There's this joy because we first made room for people within our hearts. That's something we can always remember. The other thing I love about Mark chapter 2 is that Jesus doesn't look at the man coming down out of the ceiling and say, wait, I was just getting to my favorite point in this sermon. Nor do the people in the house go, whoa, back of the line with you, buddy, back of the line. What they do is immediately make room. They let this man be lowered down into the home, and they address the urgent needs. Something that we've been saying at Embry Hills, and I'm sure your elders agree here, is that it is okay to send a text or to make the call that says, this can't wait. This can't wait. We have those moments, right? We have those times where we need to be closer to Jesus, where we need that spiritual guidance, where we need that help. And rather than the crowd at this time saying, no, get out of here, room is made because room has been made in their hearts and room is now made by Jesus. Look at the very end of what we just read in verse 12. As those urgent needs are brought to the front, I think there is great joy. What we see in all three accounts, Mark 2:12, Matthew 9:8, and Luke 5:26, is that all of the gospel writers say they end up glorifying God. That's what was in our opening prayer this morning. That's what we're striving to do today. God is glorified. The crowd is not there as competition. This crowd becomes their cheering section. Look what Jesus has done. Look at the miracle that he's performed. Look at the faith of these men that he's highlighted. Rather than being in each other's way, we are lifting each other up. We're supporting each other. I just think that's the attitude, that's the heart we need to have as we navigate crowds today. But I want to go a little bit further in the lesson this morning. Let's also think about not just navigating the crowd, but increasing our faith. Jesus says in chapter 2 and verse 5 that he can see their faith. This is not just a vain declaration of empty words. There is action here. And he sees some amazing things about their faith as these friends are going above and beyond. I love to read the Jameson Fawcett Brown commentary. That's one a preacher in Florida turned me on to. It's always super concise and it's free. Another good, But the JFB says this about these men. Faith that is not to be defeated. A faith victorious over difficulties. Don't we agree with that? That these friends have gone above and beyond to bring the paralytic because they are going to be victorious over their difficulties. Look at the way Jesus deals with this faith. He sees that their faith is very confident. Look at chapter 1, verse 27, please. Mark chapter 1, verse 27. They were all amazed, so they debated among themselves, saying, what is this, a new teaching with authority? He commands even the unclean spirits, and they obey him. Remember where we are in Mark chapter 2. This is not at the end. This is not after Jesus walks on the water and feeds the 5,000. This is still at the very beginning. They have seen very few miracles, and yet they are extremely confident. It's like we read in Matthew chapter 8, verse 10, when Jesus says, I haven't seen faith like this in all of Israel, right? With the centurion who says, hey, you say it, and it will happen. You know what I want? I want to have a more confident faith. We have seen so much more than they had seen at this point. But these friends come and remove the roof off of Peter's house because they are confident in what Jesus can do. How many lives have we seen changed? How many marriages have we seen healed? How many teens have we seen grow up to do amazing things? I think about the high school kids I taught 16 years ago here, and now they've got their own kids. How much have we seen? Think of Thomas. right? At the end of John's gospel, Thomas says, I'm not going to believe until I touch the scars and put my hand into his side. And yet these men have a confident faith on what we would describe as very little evidence. So what's our excuse going to be? I want to have a more confident faith like these four friends. I want to have a faith that's more active. Chapter 2 and verse 3, they came bringing to him a paralytic carried by four men. This is not just a, oh, it would be nice. Oh, let me know if you need anything. Please don't forget to. No, they get up and they get moving. They are bringing their friend to Jesus. And I want to have an active faith this year that jumps up and meets the needs that are right in front of me, those needs that are clearly pressing. I want to have a compassionate faith, the kind that looks over and says, this one is suffering a hardship that is beyond what I suffer. This person is carrying a load and a burden, and I've seen enough that I'm going to treat them like family. I've seen enough that I'm going to help them with what they're struggling, and I'm going to draw them closer to Jesus. I love the compassion in these men's faith, and I love the cooperation. Look, I get it. Some things are private. You need to have that one-on-one conversation with Jeff or David or one of the elders or deacons or friends. You need to have the confidentiality. You need to have the privacy of that one-on-one work. But some things can't be done without cooperation. And we need to be looking for where I can do this part and you can do that part. When we first moved to Atlanta, one of the nicest meals that we had was a little family, and they said, you know what, we have partnered with another family. And anytime we have new members, they do dessert and we do dinner. And we all meet at this house, and then we invite one more member that we don't know very well. And so it ends up being four families all for dinner. And then the next time they do a new member, the other person, you know, has to do the work of cleaning the house. They clean the house and do dinner. You bring dessert. And they just partnered up. And guys, I've been watching them do this for years, working in a partnership to welcome new members and to get to know members that they just don't know as well. There's a level of cooperation there that just is so strong. And it's something that is binding the faith of these men together in Mark chapter 2. But maybe the part that is most significant is just how determined they are. If you go back and think about that teacher that went above and beyond for you, or that friend or that neighbor or your spouse or that family member, would you agree with this statement? That sometimes going above and beyond is not so much a matter of difficulty as it is of determination. I am determined, no matter what everybody else thinks is normal, no matter what the social norms say I should be doing, I'm determined to do this. When you think about the roof of a first century house, I'm going to show some pictures in a second, it's not actually that hard to put a hole in. You know, if you invite a bunch of teenagers over and they get a little bit carried away and somebody kicks a hole in the drywall of your dining room, you're probably going to remember that. And what do we say about the book of Mark? The book of Mark is most likely Peter recounting these things, right? And so maybe it was pretty memorable the day that somebody put a hole in Peter's roof because they were absolutely determined to get their friend to Jesus. What are you determined to do this year? How are you determined to finish this year strong, living with the kind of faith that these men have? As I start thinking about this, I want to ask myself, what's keeping me from getting closer to Jesus? Some people struggle with exactly what this paralyzed man is struggling with. They have an illness. They have a hardship, and if they were being really honest, they have days where they say, this doesn't feel fair, and I'm a little bit angry. Have you had that conversation with someone? Have you had that conversation playing in between your ears? Where you just say to yourself, why? And when you're tempted to feel angry at God, you might put distance between yourself. I want you to see that the paralyzed man here isn't angry and distant. He says, I want to be closer. I want to come to God because he's actually the solution to my problems. It could be that you're the person that has that kind of physical problem, but it may be other things. It may be that you just don't like the crowd. It's not convenient to have to navigate the crowd. It's a little bit harder to open up our heart and make room and manage logistics for the crowd. Can I at least say this to you? That gets a lot easier when you navigate it with a friend. As these four people are coming together, the crowd suddenly feels a lot less significant. And maybe you're visiting here for the first time this morning, and this feels like an awfully big room compared to what you're used to. Let me just tell you, it gets a lot smaller with a friend. Getting closer to one another makes it a lot easier. But maybe there's just a barrier. Some of you remember that my dad has done roofing for a lot of years. Here's the first century roof. You would have long beams laid across these stone walls, and you'd have smaller sticks between each of the beams. And of course, that's not very waterproof or going to hold much heat in. So if we can look at kind of a cross section, what you're going to do in the first century in Capernaum is you're going to put a whole lot of mud on top of that. You can see a little bit of grass growing in this particular picture from Brother Farrell Jenkins. And not only are you going to put mud there, but each year you're going to get like this roller. This is not Fred Flintstone's car. This is like our Swiffers, okay? And you got this roller, and you're going to roll out the mud and fill in all the cracks. When I'm telling you about the determination in the faith of these friends, I'm saying that it doesn't take a lot to bust through a little bit of mud and a few sticks. But it does take the will to do it. It takes the will to be different. And I would tell you, whatever is keeping you away from Jesus, it's time to push through. Because the most above and beyond thing in this chapter is the forgiveness that he provides to the man that was paralyzed. Look at the ways that he goes above and beyond. Let's go over to Matthew chapter 9 for just a second. Look at the extra detail Matthew adds in the conversation that Jesus has with the paralyzed man. Verse 2, they brought to him a paralytic lying on a bed. And seeing their faith, Jesus said to the paralytic, "Take courage, son, your sins are forgiven." Don't you love that Jesus would call him a son? It's like this endearing relationship. Take courage. You're someone I care about. You're not a stranger to me. You're a son. There's a relationship that he's insinuating there. And to say take courage, you might remember that's what Jesus told the blind man. I think it was Bartimaeus, right? He was so calling out. And everyone in the crowd, there's that crowd again. Everyone in the crowd said, "Hey, be quiet. Stop bothering Jesus. Be quiet. Stop bothering Jesus." But he keeps calling out. And when Jesus finally turns around and says, "What do you want?" the crowd tells the blind man, "Take courage. The master is calling for you." So he calls him son, but then he changes his heart. He changes where he's at emotionally. Literally, take courage. Things are about to get better. Matthew is emphasizing this compassion and this love that Jesus has for the lame man. And as you go into verse 5, you see that he responds with tremendous authority. "Son, your sins are forgiven." That wasn't on his radar. That wasn't the first thing these friends were thinking about. But it's the chief concern of Jesus. Is that our chief concern as well? To not just bring our friends so that they would know more about how to have a happy marriage. Not just bring our friends so that their kids would be honest and, you know, hardworking. But to bring our friends to Jesus, that their sins could be forgiven. The divine authority that Jesus speaks here is shocking to the crowd. In fact, we see in verse 6 and verse 7 that they have a lot of questions, but Jesus knows those questions. Verse 8, "Why are you reasoning about these things in your heart?" I would tell you that as we think about getting closer to Jesus and putting our faith and our trust in Jesus, we should not underestimate his insights. How much he really knows about what's going on in my heart and in your heart. How much he really understands what we are struggling with and facing in our life. He understands exactly what is on the heart of this crowd. And he wants to help them grow. He wants to help them grow so much that he provides not just this visible evidence of healing the man, but I got to tell you, when I come back to this chapter, I'm impressed with the scriptural evidence he provides. You might have noticed when I was reading, I was trying to emphasize this phrase, "Jesus is the Son of Man," verse 10. Son of Man. That's not just a title that was given to Ezekiel the prophet. To be called the Son of Man was what Daniel prophesied in chapter 7, verse 14. There's the kingdom of the Babylonians, the kingdom of the Medo-Persians, the kingdoms of the Greeks and the Romans, but there is an ultimate eternal kingdom that the Father gave to the Son of man. And if they had any mistakes reading Daniel's prophecy and thinking that this was only like a heavenly kingdom, Jesus says the Son of Man has authority on earth. How does he end the book of Matthew, the Great Commission? All authority has been given in heaven and on earth. Jesus is showing right here and right now, forgiveness has come. His grace is available, and he has the authority to forgive this man's sin. I think mentioning Son of Man in this context would have piqued the ears of his Jewish audience that had been anticipating the fulfillment of Daniel's prophecies from chapter 7. Knowing that they were living in this fourth great world empire, Jesus gives incredible evidence here. Aren't these the things that we're trying to show our friends about? That Jesus has incredible love. That Jesus is the ultimate authority. That he understands us and understands our deepest needs. And that there is an abundance of both visible and scriptural evidence to build our faith on. So that our lives would not be tossed about. But that we would walk with Jesus. He forgives this man. And he does so with amazing grace. So much so that the crowd can't help but glorify God, saying, "We have never seen anything like this." I want to leave you this morning with this thought, that Jesus has gone above and beyond for every one of us because he went to the cross. He gave his life. He suffered through the agony of that crucifixion because of his great love and his great grace for each one of us. And so I would wonder, is there someone here this morning that wants to express and confess their faith in Jesus Christ? That you look at the forgiveness that was given here, the healing that was given here, and you know that you need Jesus. I would tell you, he's gone above and beyond, and it's time for us to be devoted and determined to come to him. And if we can help you with any spiritual need, then just come forward as we stand and sing.